Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering the City of Kingston's ambitious new physician recruitment program.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. At their last meeting, Council received a mid-year update on the city's family physician recruitment program and a request to allocate an additional $400,000 to keep it going. When the recruitment initiative began in 2022, the number of patients without a family doctor in Kingston was holding stubbornly around 30,000, with residents spending hours lined up outside of clinics for a chance to secure care. In this latest update, the city shared that since the program's launch in 2022, a total of 33 new family physicians have been successfully recruited, and Kingston is nearing the milestone of rostering all unattached patients. Councillor Brandon Tozzo opened the discussion around the horseshoe, noting the refreshing sense of accomplishment, a sentiment echoed by Councillor Don Amos.
It's so rare we get a report that's great. And this is actually one of those examples of council and staff working together, allocating the appropriate funding, and us actually tackling and resolving the doctor shortage in the city of Kingston. It's impressive.
It was nice to see a positive outcome and report to value for money. And I think this is one of those health indicators for a city. And when a city can hit a home run like this and actually provide the amount of doctors with the patients that are needed, it works out really well.
Councillor Jimmy Hassan also noted the difference the program has made in what he's hearing from his constituents.
3 years ago, when I got elected as a councillor, that every third complaint we get or the comments we get, the email we get, it was no doctor, we need the doctors. But today, from last year and a half, I barely hear anything.
As for next steps, the program will be shifting focus to center on succession planning. Like many communities across Ontario, a significant number of Kingston's family doctors are nearing retirement. And without structured support for transitions, thousands of patients could become unattached once again. Over 28% of Kingston's 114 rostered family physicians are aged 60 or older, collectively caring for more than 22,000 patients. Craig Desjardins, director of the city's Office of Strategy, Innovation and Partnerships, explained this next phase of the program before council.
We are actually starting to work in collaboration with the Physicians Council, the Primary Care Council, as well as going out and proactively meeting with the clinics to get a sense of when the doctors are retiring. So the goal over the next number of years is to make sure that we know before the patients have to be actually informed. So we would have somebody lined up, ready to go.
According to Desjardins, the goal is to streamline the process so that when a doctor retires, their patients are automatically re-rostered with another provider. Desjardins also highlighted the crucial role nurse practitioners will continue to play in addressing the doctor shortage across the province.
The increase in the number of nurse practitioners involved in the primary care is certainly quite exciting. There's significant change happening. In 2026, there's sort of a major change that will advance the billing opportunities for nurse practitioners, which will again change the opportunities for them. Right now, you're seeing nurse practitioner-led clinics. You're also seeing nurse practitioners better integrated into primary care clinics. So it is a really exciting time, and it is certainly something that is going to be critical for the Ontario Health System to address the challenge of unrostered patients.
Still, staff acknowledge the city's zero unattached residents goal won't come without challenges, especially as retirements continue and population growth outpaces recruitment.
We are working very hard you will recognize that it is a moving target as the city continues to grow and we add new residents to the community. Many of those, the majority of those are not, don't have family doctors. So that number is constantly ebbing and flowing. But I can say that with the four net new doctors that we signed just at the end of the summer, plus a innovation grant we issued that creates about 5,000 new positions. The Midtown Clinic is still rostering. They have about 5,000 patients to roster, I assume, as they move into their new location. And the OHT recently received funding from the province to roster another 3,500. So we have lots of capacity we're adding to adjust and meet the growing population.
Council unanimously approved the additional funding to sustain the momentum of the program. For those still without a family doctor, registering with Healthcare Connect remains the best way to get matched with a provider.
Every Kingstonian who live in Kingston, they deserve a family doctor. And we will continue to work hard to make sure that everyone has it.
For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about a carbon removal agreement between Microsoft and UNDO that will make use of wollastonite mined from Sealy's Bay.
Thank you, Jesse. On Wednesday, October 21st, UNDO, a UK-based carbon removal company, and Microsoft announced a new agreement to remove 28,900 tons of carbon dioxide by 2036. The project will utilize wollastonite sourced from the Canadian wollastonite mine near Sealy's Bay in a process known as enhanced rock weathering. By spreading finely crushed silicate rock on farmland, UNDO accelerates a natural chemical reaction that captures CO2 from the atmosphere and stores it in a stable form in soil and groundwater for centuries. The agreement builds on Microsoft and UNDO's ongoing collaboration, highlighting both the scalability of ERW as a climate solution and the role of financial innovation in unlocking large-scale carbon removal projects. Unlike traditional grant or equity funding, the new financing structure gives UNDO upfront capital to scale ERW projects immediately, using the long-term purchase agreement with Microsoft as security for repayment. By turning future carbon credit revenue into a bankable investable asset, this model removes the risk from large-scale ERW deployment, accelerates carbon removal projects in Ontario and beyond, and shows how financial innovation can unlock gigaton-scale climate solutions while supporting sustainable agriculture. Wollastonite, a calcium silicate mineral unique in Canada to the small eastern Ontario deposit, has become a sought-after ingredient in the emerging carbon removal industry. For UNDO, the Kingston region offers both the geological and agricultural bases to scale up quickly. The St. Lawrence wollastonite deposit has been active for over a decade, but its environmental story is a quiet standout. The mine site features restored wetlands and protected wildlife areas, a rare distinction for an industrial operation. That ecological track record helped position Canadian wollastonite as a credible partner in carbon removal. From the mine, UNDO trucks the crushed rock to farms across eastern Ontario from Napanee to Brockville. Farmers receive the mineral free of charge, part of UNDO's model that exchanges rock application and field data for carbon credit revenue. The benefits aren't just environmental. According to local trials, wollastonite improves soil pH, strengthens crops against pests, and replenishes calcium and silicon, making the collaboration as much about soil health as climate repair. In May 2025, Queen's University reopened Nixon Field after replacing turf with a system embedding locally mined wollastonite beneath the playing surface. The goal, to turn the field itself into a small-scale carbon sink. That project marked one of the first instances of enhanced rock weathering being used by a municipality or institution in Canada. It demonstrates how Kingston's mix of research materials and community partnerships could make it a testbed for climate innovation. As the climate industry races to scale up, what's happening around Kingston could serve as a microcosm of how rural communities and global technology can intersect in the area of carbon removal. And thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a report from the LJI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, with a story about Gananoque Town Council's no-confidence vote in Mayor John Beddoes.
Thank you, Dinah. Gananoque Town Council has passed a vote of no confidence in Mayor John Beddoes. The motion, brought forward during last Tuesday's council meeting, received unanimous support from all six councillors. Gananoque Council is composed of six councillors and the mayor. Councillor David Osman says the decision was not made lightly. While the vote carries no formal policy weight, Osman said it was intended as a symbolic gesture to express council's collective concerns and encourage improved collaboration heading into the final year of the current term. Relations between the mayor and councillors have been strained in recent months, with differences in the council chamber frequently spilling over to social media. Points of contention have included an integrity commissioner's report in the spring that found multiple breaches of the municipal code of conduct on Beddoe's part, including harassment, discriminatory remarks, and aggressive behavior. Council voted to dock the mayor's pay, to which Beddoes responded with a judicial review. More recently, the mayor and council have clashed over Beddoes' plans, embedded in a 2026 budget submission, to clamp out-of-province vehicles for parking violations. The mayor later set aside the plan.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about changes to Greater Dauphiné's curbside collection program.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Residents of Greater Napanee will see a change in their recycling pickup on January 1st, 2026. Starting in the new year, Circular Materials Ontario will take over Greater Napanee's blue and gray bin programs. MTERRA Environmental will be collecting all recyclable materials. To help residents prepare for the transition, the town is holding information sessions on October 23rd and November 4th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. at 99 Advance Avenue. These sessions will provide an opportunity to learn about the transition, how it may impact residents, and how related concerns will be addressed in the new year. Deputy Director of Environmental Services, Growth and Infrastructure Services, Andrew Girouard, spoke about the changes for 2026 and the possibility of more changes in the coming years.
2026, residents should not see a change in their collection dates, the streams of recycling, or what recyclables are collected. Beyond 2026, Circular Materials Ontario and MTERRA can decide to change collection dates, routes, streams, how it's collected, so on and so forth.
CAO Matthew Grant explained challenges staff are facing and how they're moving forward in the new year.
There's going to be some change management challenges that will present themselves as this rolls out.
The Queen's Gaels are making the long trek to Windsor to battle the Lancers for a shot at the Yates Cup. These two teams last met on homecoming, where Windsor stole a victory on a last-second field goal. Can Queens avenge their homecoming loss, or will they suffer another agonizing semifinal stumble? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM to find out. We go live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show and the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
As the cooler weather sets in the Kingston area, CFRC and KPP concerts are churning up the heat with a stacked fall lineup. On October 10th, check out Shania Twink, followed by the Arrogant Worms on October 11th at Broom Factory. Sloan hits the Ale House on October 18th, and folks can catch the Grapes of Wrath on October 22nd, Crywank on November 1st, and Georgia Harmer on November 8th at the Broom. Billy Faffel, Guy Davis, and Rhea May are also playing at the Broom on November 12th, 15th, and 16th, respectively. For a complete list of shows and ticket information, visit kppconcerts.com.
Are you listening from inside a local prison, or do you have a friend or loved one in a local prison or youth detention center? Calls from Home is a monthly radio program for you. On Calls from Home, we share voicemails, messages, song requests, and dedications. Anyone can contact us with a message or song request for a friend or loved one on the inside. To get in touch, call or text 613-917-1390. Email cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net or send us a message on Instagram @cfrcprisonradio. the CFRC radio signal reaches the following local and regional prisons: Millhaven, Bath, Collins Bay and Frontenac, Joyceville and Pittsburgh, the Sundance Youth Detention Center here in Kingston, Quinte in Napanee, and the Cape Vincent Correctional Facility in upstate New York. Messages and song requests will be broadcast once per month on Wednesday between 7 and 8 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM or on the web at cfrc.ca. For 2025, Calls from Home will air on the following dates: April 16th, May 14th, June 11th, July 9th, August 6th, September 3rd, October 1st, October 29th, November 26th, and December 24th. Please send in your message at least one day before the broadcast date. These upcoming show dates, contact info, and additional information is available online at cfrc.ca or on Instagram at CFRC Prison Radio. We look forward to receiving your messages and sharing them over the airwaves.
Some disabilities are invisible, and it may sound strange that someone with a hearing problem volunteers on air at a community radio station. Over time, the ravages of tinnitus and Meniere's disease not only impacted my hearing, but left lots of
humming.
That
story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about local efforts to rejuvenate a community park in Wellington.
The weather was picture perfect last week for the celebration of the rejuvenation of the Wellington Park in Prince Edward County. The park is located along the shore of Lake Ontario and is the core of the downtown area where festivals, community activities, and families enjoy the space. The gardens have been neglected due to other municipal priorities, so the Wellington Community Association took up the challenge to rejuvenate the park. The group of volunteers canvassed for donations of plants, trees, and soil, planned and designed the area, and went to work. The rejuvenation was celebrated, and they received a certified wildlife habitat designation from the Canadian Wildlife Federation. Peter Hall is one of the organizers and talked about the project.
Thank you to all of you, because you've all had a part in this amazing rejuvenation of the Wellington Park. And why was it needed? It was full of weeds, it was overgrown, it was completely, completely unloved. We needed to do something about it, and WCA is an association that steps up where it sees need in Wellington. We applied for a grant to cover all of this wonderful things that were going to happen. And it was rejected. Yeah. We decided we were going to do it alone.
Do it anyway.
We decided we could go on. Yeah.
That's the county way.
We can do it.
That's right. All of the trees are native and strategic, chosen by Lise and her group. And then we had an arborist from Lockyer's who actually placed the trees so that they are not in the middle of the park, so you can still have your frisbee and your football game, but they are so that you can also get some shade if you want to sit down for a picnic or a family gathering or whatever. These plants are native. They're used to drought, thankfully. They're used to cold, and what they'll do is next year they will fill out. Some of them in the shade are looking a little sad right now, but they're shade plants. They will take a little bit longer to get going, but it is absolutely wonderful to see the restoration and the rejuvenation of this park. To each one of you, a very sincere thank you. We honestly could not have done it without each of you participating in how you've done it. And I do want to say that we live in an outstanding community who's given generously to Wellington Community Association, and we as WCA, we strive to make this village a place of beauty, a place for families and children, and for our visitors to come and enjoy, a place of quiet reflection, a place of frisbee or soccer. And we're very blessed, and we are all very, very grateful to you. And we've just received a certification from the Wildlife Federation of Canada for this park and the plants, and the fact that they're native plants. So we are assisting with the ecology of the country, of the village, of the park.
Lisa Lindsay, Director of Recreation and Community Facilities, thanked the group.
I just thanked the Wellington Community Association because the Recreation Community Facilities Department is a pretty lean department with pages and pages of ideas, and having a group of people come together to work with us helps us meet the goals that we're trying to achieve in our parks.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story detailing the future of the Garden Hill Dam.
The Garden Hill Dam on the Ganaraska River is facing an uncertain future. The Ganaraska Region Conservation Authority, which built and owns the 66-year-old structure, said it is in need of significant repairs, but cautioned that if restoration does not proceed, the dam may need to be decommissioned. Corey Harris, Watershed Services Coordinator with the environmental group, presented to Port Hope Council Tuesday night, requesting funding for the two-year project. A 2023 dam inspection report found deficiencies and that installation of additional erosion protections, resealing the construction joints between the upstream wing walls and abatement walls, and replacing the deteriorating stop logs would be needed. The leakage from the bottom stop logs of the dam is now considered significant, as Harris suspects these stop logs were originally installed in 1959.
One of the big reasons that we're bringing this forward now is that we've seen a rapid deterioration of the stop logs within the dam. Our concern here, too, is that at the current rate of deterioration, we're going to be in a position shortly where we're not going to be able to maintain a water level in this reservoir.
The Conservation Authority currently does not have the funding to complete the needed repairs to the dam and is requesting a cost sharing with Port Hope and the province, requiring the municipality to pay approximately $340,000. The dam and reservoir is home to fish, wildlife, turtles, and frogs, and is used by the Port Hope Fire Department. Year one of the repair process would comprise of environmental assessments and design, with the actual work itself taking place the following year. Harris outlined what decommissioning of the dam would look like, stating it would cost similar to repairing the structure, as much of the same repair preparation work would be done with decommissioning. While much of the questions from council focused on monetary commitments, several asked about decommissioning, with Harris explaining it would not be catastrophic to area wildlife.
To look at decommissioning, you know, it's not all bad. If we could get offline ponds, you could maintain some of that habitat. You could perhaps even get fish passage back through this area if we did a rocky ramp in the culvert. So there's pros and cons to each, but I know the local community is very attached to this reservoir.
Council did not make a decision on the proposal Tuesday night, rather to receive the presentation for informational purposes. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is the Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, October 30th, daytime high of 10 degrees with an overnight low of 6, mostly cloudy conditions. Friday, October 31st, Halloween, 61% chance of precipitation in the morning and afternoon, should clear up for trick-or-treating in the evening. Daytime high of 10 degrees, overnight low of 6. So bundle up if you're heading out with the little ones on the 31st. Saturday, November 1st, daytime high of 10, mostly sunny conditions. Sunday, November 2nd, daytime high of 10, mostly rainy conditions, 55% chance of precipitation. And then moving into the start of the first full week of November, Monday, November 3rd, daytime high of 11, overcast with rainy conditions, overnight low of 4 degrees.
Listings and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with a quick reminder from Public Services and Procurement Canada that the LaSalle Causeway will be closed on Sunday, November 2nd from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. That is closed to all pedestrian and vehicle traffic. In terms of road closures, Aberdeen Street William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Brass Point Bridge is closed October 29th and 30th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. each day for the replacement of bridge deck planks. Motorists are asked to plan their travel accordingly and to exercise caution in the area. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Kings Court Ave, concession to First Ave, is closed until November 21st for gas main installation. Ontario Street at Lower Union is closed October 27th at 8 p.m. to October 28th at 4 a.m. for the installation of commemorative crosswalks. Ontario Street at Lower Union is also closed October 29th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. for the unveiling of commemorative crosswalks. Queen Street, King to Ontario, is closed October 28th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to complete asphalt restoration. Wellborn Avenue, Chelsea to Everett, is closed October 31st from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. for the Wicked Wellborn Block Party. And Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Ave. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Taylor Kidd Boulevard, Collins Bay to Coronation, expect delays beginning October 30th at 7 a.m. to November 7th at 7 p.m. for the replacement of two culverts. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Short set of stairs, join me, Grim, in the basement for my working knowledge of indie, experimental, post-punk, and electronic, every Wednesday from 10 until 11 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Get ready to press record.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Quaymo! Quaymo, my goodness! Nico Quaymo with a touchdown!
Follow follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
Let's play ball. It's a beautiful evening, fans, at the ballpark, the game starts, warm summer breezes, sun's going down, it's all dark, at the ballpark, that's okay, it's a night game.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Plugged In My Ears podcast. I'm Adam with Kyle and Sam. Big news out of Toronto. We had the Blue Jays playing last night and it was a long one. So this show is going to come out on Thursday, but it's Tuesday when we're recording. So we just experienced heartbreak in 18 innings last night. But we got a big game four coming up tonight. Hopefully the next time we're talking about this series, it is in more of a happier tone, but right now the Blue Jays are down 2-1. The listeners are going to see if our predictions are accurate by the time it comes out on Thursday. But Kyle, Sam, you guys watched a little bit of the game last night. What time did you guys clock out at? Cause I know I stayed up till the last home run from Freddie Freeman, but I know that it wasn't for everyone last night.
No, I tapped out at about, I think, the 12th inning or something like that. But yeah. As soon as it went to extra, like overtime or whatever, I kind of knew the Dodgers were going to win.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I was just like, yeah, they're probably going to win this because the rest of the game was poorly officiated and kind of seemed like things were just tilting the wrong way. Yeah. But I think, on a positive note, the one takeaway is that wore out all of the backups on the Dodgers like crazy, which is really bad news for them, actually, because they don't have as much depth as the Blue Jays. So, yeah. I mean, but Ohtani was just – it was – honestly, Ohtani won that game 100%. It wasn't even – no one else. It was just him.
Yeah.
And that was just ridiculous.
Ohtani played insane. I mean, I'm pretty sure they intentionally walked him four times last night, and he had four hits, two doubles, and two home runs. Just an incredible showing. Sam, what did you think of the game last night?
Well, you guys both beat me. I went to bed around 10 p.m. because I have to get up early in the morning if I want to go to the gym. But I woke up, and the first thing I did was check my phone, and I was sad to see that the Blue Jays lost, and then I learned pretty quickly that it was 18 innings, I think. And correct me if I'm wrong. That's the second longest game in MLB history.
In World Series history.
Which is kind of cool, considering everything that's on the line beyond just the game of baseball. But no, I agree. From what I was watching, at least, that was a. I think the Jays will be better set for today because they started rotating guys in a bit earlier, and hopefully things start to go a little bit better overall. But, you know, this is not a bad spot to be in, I think, for the Blue Jays, even though they're down 2-1 in the series, because they have what to lose? They're the underdogs. Yeah. So now that the Dodgers are sleepy and also a bit more worn out, at least they're good players. Hopefully the Blue Jays can capitalize on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. Those are definitely two bright spots. One thing I want to talk about is the umpiring in last night's game. So there was that miscue in one of the earlier innings where there was a late strike call. So the pitch had been thrown. The umpire kind of dabbled with it, was thinking about it, called it a strike late, and it would have been ball four, which would have advanced the runners. Bichette was in motion from first to second, got confused. They were able to tag him out. It was a quick double play, I think it was only strike two to Varsho, but it was still a kind of a fluky out early on. And I saw a post that was like, if this game had been umped professionally, the game would have been done before extra innings. We wouldn't have even needed to go to extra innings. So it was definitely questionable from the umps. Now they do rotate, so it won't be the same umpire calling balls and strikes tonight. So that's a little bit promising. But I mean, I think we just, I was talking with my housemates last night about the officiating and the across the different leagues. And I think we've talked about it a couple of times on the show here. But I mean, the MLB is definitely the one where there's probably the most, it's okay to be wrong by the umpires. Like, I think balls and strikes sometimes are really like, oh, it's part of the game, you know, that's why we haven't gone to robot umpiring yet. But this sucks. That hurt to watch, especially when your team's on the wrong side of it. But there is robot umpiring coming in next year to assist the umpires. Do you think that this is like the Jays were 1 year too early getting into the World Series? They would have had to, wouldn't have had to deal with this.
I mean,
if they had the assistance.
I mean, I think my problem with that call is I think it was wrong.
Yeah.
It wasn't a strike. That was fully a ball. I don't know what he was seeing that someone else, like we weren't, but that was way out. So I don't know. Yeah. That's the part I didn't get. I was like, so that was the wrong call. I mean, the thing I didn't understand, so they couldn't challenge that either. Like there was some weird, like, I don't understand that. Like, I don't really get what happened there. That's, to me, that was just straight bias. I don't know what else that, like, it was, you know, there's ones that, like, you know, you get the computer and you see it's like pretty, you know, close and you could go either way with that. To me, that one was at least a couple inches up. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was pretty clear that it wasn't a strike. And I mean, yeah, they can't challenge balls and strikes. It's kind of just the restrictions of the coach's challenge in the major leagues. But I mean, it really would have come in handy if the Jays had the ability to challenge that. Even giving them like one challenge a game to challenge balls and strikes. I mean, I think in like crucial moments like that, I mean, you can't not make that call right. So. I know what you mean, though. I feel like that play really set the tone for the rest of the game, that everything was going to go in favor of the Dodgers over the Jays. Like, it, like just momentum-wise, I don't know necessarily about balls and strikes. Like, calls were pretty even the rest of the game, but it did feel like the Jays were having a lot harder time in those extra innings to even take balls than the Dodgers. The Dodgers seemed to be able to drag out all of their at-bats, tire the Jays out, but... just a heartbreaking finish, especially with a Canadian Freddie Freeman hitting the walk-off home run. So that's got to sting a little bit. But I think that's just gonna fire the Jays up a little more tonight. Hopefully they can win this one and then maybe even the third game in LA and bring it back to Toronto. All they need is one to bring it back to Toronto. So I think it's going to be a good rest of the World Series, but definitely a heartbreaker in Game 3.
But I'm just quickly before we move on. What are the robots supposed to do to help the umpires if they're not there simply to replace them?
The ones coming in next year?
What's the plan? I mean, I heard about that too, but I actually didn't really look into what that entailed.
I know they have tried them out in the minor leagues where they would have, like, on the close calls, the robots would be able to override the calls that the umps make. I don't know exactly how it's going to work in the MLB because it doesn't seem like it's going to be a thing that's in every game. It seems like a thing that's only going to be in like select games, kind of sprinkled around. I think it's to encourage the umpires to be better. So I think they it's kind of more as like a last resort than anything else, like to kind of encourage them to try and call what's the proper strike zone. But I don't know exactly how it's going to look, but that will definitely be interesting to see next year. It is weird too, though, because I kind of have always been on the side of, we don't need robot umpires in baseball. I kind of do like the guessing game. Like sometimes your pitcher's going to get a crazy good call because it was a great framing by the catcher. Like it kind of takes away the skill that is catching requires. Catching is one of the most underrated positions in baseball because a catcher can turn a ball into a strike pretty easily, and it is hard to do. So I think that's going to take away a lot of the catcher's uniqueness. I know Alejandro Kirk, one of the Jays' catcher, he's one of the best at actually framing pitches. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. But I mean, there's only one way to see how it works. But I think it's similar to what they have in tennis. I don't know if you've watched any of like the like U.S. Open or Wimbledon, but they have like sometimes they can like the players can challenge, and then the umpire has to go and look, and it's kind of like a VAR system, but it shows where the ball was out or in, whether it was on the line or not. So I think it's going to be similar to that, kind of up to the discretion. I don't know if they're going to be able to use like ABS at every pitch. I feel like that would get kind of redundant and slow the game down a little bit. Like, I think it was like junior hockey where like they have like unlimited challenges or something a couple years ago, and like everything was being challenged. So yeah, I don't know what it will look like, but hopefully it's a little bit better. Hopefully it will prevent situations like last night's for all teams. I mean, not just the Blue Jays, but yeah. Moving on a little bit to the NBA. They started their season last week, so they're about a week into their season, but the biggest news seems to be the FBI's gambling probe that busted two NBA known figures, Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier. Now, I don't know too much about this one, but apparently there's some fancy X-ray tables and stuff going on. Sam, Kyle, what's going on with this story?
It was multiple things. I'll tie it into the NHL, though, because there was a joke going around that Evander Kane was one of the people that snitched on this gambling ring, because obviously he would know about it.
Of course.
But also the fact that he happened to be having dinner with Kash Patel a couple of days before the announcement.
I did see
coincidence.
That.
I don't know, maybe. But if anyone in the NHL knew about it, I'm sure it was him. So kind of lines up there. But yeah, there was multiple things going on. Rigging games, players faking injuries, scams at casinos. Kind of wild. I mean, unsurprising, but the part that's surprising to me is the players that are involved. Like, I just straight up don't get.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I guess the scale's bigger than I'm thinking, but as far as my understanding was, like, I mean, the pay scale of an NBA player is huge, right? So, like, compared to the average person, like, them risking jail time for $500K is not worth it, obviously, or it's not worth it for anyone, but, like, the incentive's even lower for them because they make more than that per game.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know. Maybe there's some blackmail or something behind the curtains going on. I don't know, though.
Yeah, no, and Chauncey Billups, he's a Hall of Famer. Like, he's been done his career. He was coaching the Portland Trailblazers when this whole thing came out and had kind of a perfect reputation. Like, never really done and never had any run-ins with the law, never had any suspensions or anything. Was always kind of known as a level-headed player. So I think that surprised me the most. And, I mean, even Terry Rozier, I mean, like, a guy hasn't really had too many issues with any kind of controversy, but here they are headlining this crazy investigation. Sam, any thoughts on this?
It feels like science fiction.
Yeah.
With X-ray glasses and an X-ray table. This feels like actual science fiction, but I don't really know what to think of it, frankly, because I kind of agree. Like, if you're making that much money, why the heck would you do something like this? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of insignificant in reality. But I will say this, though, too. I was kind of surprised to see certain people participate in that. And one thing that I find really weird, too, that no one seems to be mentioning, because it doesn't really show up in the media regularly that much, but there's still crime syndicate families in New York that wield this much power who are somehow meddling with dudes in the NBA.
Yeah.
Like, come on. This is going to make a crazy, crazy child book in the future. But this is just so weird. I think we just have to appreciate it for what it is. It's better than watching the NBA anyways, because apparently people aren't playing, they're faking injuries. Who would have thought that to happen, as if it wasn't already obvious? Now it's just been confirmed, and now that it's confirmed, it's like I don't even know how to explain it. It's just like to catch a predator, but it's just to catch a dumbass.
No, honestly, like the NBA, I mean, I've lost so much respect for the NBA and its players over the past few years. I mean, the game's become unwatchable, and now, like, you don't see leagues having issues with players faking injuries like this, like, anywhere. Like, this is just, like, unheard of in professional sports. Kyle, you're going to say something?
I think the only people that are really panicking, I mean, the NBA's panicking because it's a PR problem, but the people that are panicking the most are the betting companies, because who's going to bet on an NBA game?
Yeah.
Like, I why would you do that right now?
No, absolutely.
So, yeah, there's some, I mean, honestly, good. Like, those companies deserve to lose out. But, yeah, they're losing some big money right now. People are losing sleep over this quite a bit.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of the biggest controversies of the year, and it already happened in week one of the NBA season. Another league that's kind of been going on pretty exciting. It's been pretty exciting for me. I mean, I've been watching a lot of games. Is the NHL? They've about 2 weeks in, 10 games, 2 or 3 weeks in. So we're kind of getting to see what the early days are like, and who's doing well and who's doing not so well. One team I want to start out with talking about is the Tampa Bay Lightning. So they are almost dead last in the NHL right now. I don't think a lot of people saw that one coming. They kind of don't have too many injury problems. It seems to be kind of just either not bad luck, but just poor play. They are almost nearing back to 500, but still 26th in the league right now. Any other teams that surprised you with how poorly they're playing before we get into some of these good teams?
Well, if I may jump on this one, mm-hmm. I'm a little bit surprised, not entirely, but a bit surprised that the Rangers are doing so bad.
Yeah.
It's always surprising to see the Bruins do badly. But I think the most surprising, as you said, has to be that, Tampa Bay Lightning's doing so bad. They still have really good players.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for this. Although at the start of the year, Ottawa was doing really bad too, and now they're doing okay. So it might just be one of those things. And I think people forget. I forget what year St. Louis won the Stanley Cup in. I think it was 2018 when Tarasenko was the captain, but they were in dead last in the NHL going into Christmas, and they won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So it's not indicative of much yet, but it is shocking. And also Toronto doing bad is kind of weird too.
Yeah, they're pretty down there. Yeah, I was going to mention them. But yeah, I mean, I feel like I even expected Calgary to be a little bit better than they are. I kind of didn't expect them to be dead last, especially since Wolf is a pretty good goalie. Like, I'm kind of feel like he's getting sick and tired of playing in Calgary right now with how poorly they've played. I think they've scored the least amount of goals in the league with only 21 through 10 games. So not going to win too many games with 2 goals a game. But I mean, then there's your average stinkers are down there too. San Jose, Columbus, I mean, Buffalo, but, let's get into some of the better teams. I mean, the top five is what everyone projected, New Jersey, Utah, Pittsburgh, Colorado, and Montreal. Everyone had that as their top five. That's, I'm just joking. No one saw that coming. Utah is a team I really want to talk about. 8-2-0. One of the best offenses in the NHL. They've won 7 games in a row, only to be rivaled by New Jersey's 8 games in a row. But either of these teams, did you guys expect either of these teams to be playing this well? I mean, I feel like I didn't even have Utah on my playoff radar. And obviously it's early, but
I knew Utah was going to be good. I bet on them pretty heavily in fantasy. I have like 4 Utah players, so my fantasy team is doing very well.
Okay, I can imagine. Sam,
Logan Cooley had a natural hat trick in first period. Then the second, and then he had an assist. So I think 4-point game. And then the next game, he had 2 goals and an assist. So he's been hot. But the hottest player in the last week was Celebrini.
Yeah,
he was absolutely on a tear. I mean, this is what I was trying to say. Like, he's better than Bedard. That's what I said last year. I'm still holding that.
Yeah.
He's just way more complete player. And clearly, he's over a point per game. I don't know if that's sustainable, but if he's playing this well, I think it is.
Yeah, no, so, I saw people are saying that he should be on the Olympic roster with how he's been playing recently. Him and Schaefer.
Yeah.
People think him and Schaefer should be on the Canadian Olympic team.
It's always tough with the rookies like that or young players because the Olympics is a lot more about discipline than it is about skill sometimes. So,
yeah,
I don't know. You don't want especially a young player like that. It's not necessarily they're used to pressure, but not necessarily. Right. Like going to the Olympics, it's easy to lose your head.
Yeah,
there's some risk. There's some additional risk associated to it. But I mean, if Celebrini, if he gets 90 points this season, then he might be on the fourth line or something. I can see that.
Yeah. No, Sam, I know you wanted to talk about Pittsburgh and their start.
Yeah, I mean, look, Pittsburgh was, I will say it frankly, not very good last year. In fact, some may have described them as being equivalent to poo on ice. And this year they are phenomenal. And I don't think, and people give enough credit to the fact that they actually do have a lot of good players despite their older age. But those older players are playing pretty well, at least to me. I would say they are right now. I guess you could say that perhaps is not true. Like, I don't think too many of them are on the player leaderboard for points right now. I think Sidney Crosby's up there. I actually can't remember who on the top. I'm just going to look it up quickly so I'm not saying anything wrong.
Malkin has a lot of assists.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the old guys are still playing really well. I think Pittsburgh still has a lot to give. I'm not sure if you guys watched Amazon's NHL on ice thing that they do every year at the start of the year, sort of as a hype up, but they meet some of the players during the off season. And there's an episode called Legends, and it's about Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin. And Sidney Crosby says in that, when they ask him whether if he wants to retire soon, and he said, "Not until I know I can't win." And I think the Pittsburgh Penguins are proving right now that they can win. They can. They totally can. So I'm pretty excited for them. I think they're going to have a great year. Yeah, Crosby's got 14 points in 10 games. Wow. Come on, he's 37. That's unreal. Malkin's got 16 points.
That sounds like a good
I'll say one thing. I think the problem is that this, like, I'm not if the exact same thing happened last year, but something similar. They're just old. That team just loses steam. Like, they don't have the young players to keep through a whole season. They play great for the, enough games to do okay. But at the end of the day, you need like enough young blood on your team to kind of really push through a whole season and be successful. I think that like, that's their main issue. Like, but if they're well rested and their players, like their good players are playing well, then yeah, they can win games against tough teams.
Yeah,
no. But you are right, though. I kind of forgot how old they are. Like, 4 years ago, they had the oldest average team in the league with an average age of 31.
Wow.
And yeah, this year, Malkin's 39, Crosby's 37, Chris Letang's 38. I want to say Carlson is 36, maybe 37 also.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, think about it this way. Like, if they have a week where they play two games, I'm sure you could do the statistics on it. They probably play like have a higher chance of winning those two games. But if they have a week with four games with like two back-to-backs, they're probably going to lose two games that week at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
So yeah, they're playing at a disadvantage, obviously. But it's impressive.
Their goaltending's been really good too. I think that's something that a lot of people didn't think was going to happen with Jari and Arturi Silovs. I feel like the Vezina race right now through 10 games has been kind of some players that I didn't think were going to be up there. I know Spencer Knight is one of the candidates, Jakub Dobish. Some guys that like Dobish was a backup at the beginning of the year, and now he's just starting to kind of get 50-50 splits with Montembeau. I feel like this has been an odd start, like with goaltending just being so good for goalies that weren't really as good last year, and then it's been bad for like goalies like Vasilevsky, some of the Swayman, some of these goalies that are known as like the big time goalies in the NHL. Any thoughts on goaltending? Any opinions on why that might have changed?
If I'm Boston, I'm starting to sweat a little here because I said this was a testing season for Swayman. You can blame the team in front of him, that's sure, but like, geez, like it's not like he's showing he's worth that money. That's all I'll say. I'd be pretty nervous about that one long term. I was nervous about it from the start. I was surprised they signed that, like, because no one else was going to sign that kind of contract with him, to be honest.
Yeah.
Long term goalie contracts rarely age well. Rarely.
Yeah. No. I mean, Montreal's paying off the Price deal right now, so they shift that off to San Jose, but that was on the books for a while, and it definitely sets you back. I mean, that was only $10 million a year, which is still a lot, actually, back in 2015, but it definitely keeps the cap space tight. Your guys' thoughts on the Senators this year? They're right now in a playoff spot. They're having a pretty decent start to the season. They beat the Bruins pretty badly last night. Pros, cons, anything you're concerned about, anything you're super happy about?
Dylan Cousins has been really good. I think that's kind of the main highlight of the Senators. I mean, when he came to us from Buffalo, it was a risk. It was, the risk was that, you know, he would improve, and he definitely has quite a bit. And I mean, he's fit right in on the Senators. That's basically what we needed, a player like that, right? I mean, that was, what was the guy's name we traded? We traded Josh Norris, right? And yeah. Josh Norris, oh my God. Like, you feel bad for the guy, but I don't know if you guys saw the clip of him getting injured this season, but
no, I didn't.
My goodness. Like, he can't make this stuff up. Like, his shoulder, like, I think he needs to retire permanently. But, he goes for a face-off, no contact between the other player. He doesn't even touch the puck. He tries to reach for the puck with his stick, and his shoulder gives out, and he falls over. First game of the season, IR, probably rest of the season.
That's brutal.
Senators were feeling pretty good about that trade. I mean, I knew that from the start. Man, like, but what is Buffalo doing? that was the best trade. I knew that was going to happen. I was like, yeah, we're trying to offload this guy. Like, he's been injured perpetually ever since we started paying him. He's a good player, like, really good. He's better than Dylan Cousins, but doesn't matter if he only played 20 games a year.
No, fair but, point. Yeah.
So, I don't – yeah, Buffalo continues to have some brutal trades. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, and they're continuing to stink it up right now at the bottom of the standings. They've had a rough start. They did beat the Leafs in overtime a couple of days ago, which is – nice. Or the Leafs beat the Sabres in overtime, I apologize, which is tough to see, but also just kind of average Sabres. But yeah, they seem to not be living up to expectations either. A team that is living up to expectations, the Detroit Red Wings. I mean, finally, it seems like the Iser plan's working a little bit. First in the Atlantic, so, I mean, who knows?
Second in the Atlantic.
Oh, second in the Atlantic. Did I make that mistake on purpose? Because who's in first in the Atlantic? But the Montreal Canadiens. What a start to the season. What a segue over to the Habs. I knew you guys wanted to talk about them so bad. Sam, what's it like living in Montreal right now? Are the streets rowdy? Is everyone feeling the Canadiens?
Yeah, you know, I got to say, they are, and people are really excited about it. I have a good friend, Vinny, who's from Louisville, Quebec. And he has the most beautiful French-Canadian accent I've ever heard. And every time they win or they score a goal, he sends me a voice memo and he goes, "Ah ouais, mon tabarnak." And I rejoice. But no, people are really, really big Montreal Canadiens fans here. I didn't realize how big of a deal it was, but I was sitting in a group of people who were Canadiens fans. And I mentioned the Ottawa Senators and everyone kind of went quiet for a second. And I realized pretty quickly it wasn't because of my bad accent. It was because I said the wrong word.
Oh.
But no, it is cool. It's a cool atmosphere. And honestly, Montreal, like, it's, I don't know. I think I told you guys the other day over text. I'm not sure if I said it on radio, but I was walking up the Mont Royal, which is this big hill in the center of the city. It kind of divides English Montreal from French Montreal. And lo and behold, was walking up the hill, the great Martin Saint-Louis. And I didn't really know what to do. So just like, good luck, sir. And he said, thanks. And anyways, I guess my wish, my goodwill is paying off. The Canadians are winning.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's cool. Like, yeah, it's cool to be in the land of Le Canadien.
I saw a video of Martin Saint-Louis doing stair runs during practice or something when the Montreal Canadiens were practicing. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. So the thing is, people don't really talk about this, but he has the biggest quads I've ever seen in my life. And it's not easy to imagine, but if you want to picture what Martin Saint-Louis' quads really look like, you have to superimpose an image of a cartoon Naruto character with giga quads onto a human body, and that is exactly what he looks like. I know that sounds made up, but the striations in his quads and the width of his quads was unreal. I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Man,
it was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
We might have to deep dive this next week and go into the actual dimensions of Martin Saint-Louis' quads. Compare him to maybe Saquon Barkley. See what the quads are looking like across the leagues. But that is all the time that we have for today. I really did want to talk about Marty Saint-Louis' quads again, but it's going to have to wait till next week. But we're cheering for the Jays. We'll keep you updated on the Habs and Sens. Have a good rest of your night. We'll see you next week.
Are you looking for a summer job? What about a career in engineering, computing, or technology fields? Queens Career Service is excited to host in-person career fairs in Bartlett Gym, Mitchell Hall, on Tuesday, January 20th for the Summer and Part-Time Opportunities Fair, and Wednesday, January 21st for the Engineering and Technology Fair. Drop in anytime between 10:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. at Bartlett Gym. These events are open to all Queens students of all years. Students are encouraged to sign up in My Career to receive event reminders.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community